CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Canada, a choice for the Conservative Party in these next hours. Two leaders contending for the post, Jean Charest and Pierre Poilievre. I welcome Conrad Black, who introduces me to this contest. It is the Conservatives to choose a leader for the future. They've been out of power for a number of years. Justin Trudeau's government has been successful in several elections. However, Canada now is in a world of energy poverty, the challenge in Europe, and also as a member, as a vital member of the G7, has a strong voice in the choices to be made in these next years. So, Conrad, I welcome you. Your conversations for the National Post are very helpful between these two men and the future. But it also involves what is to be done about the choices the Trudeau government has made about energy and the choices that Quebec has made about its future. How do you distinguish between these two gentlemen of the Conservative Party? Good evening to you, Conrad.
Yeah, good evening to you, John. Well, they're about 20 years apart in age, but both well within the parameters appropriate for attaining the office of head of the government of Canada, from mid-40s to mid-60s. And they would both more or less qualify as French-Canadian. So in Pierre's case, he's really English-Canadian, but with a French stepfather, and he does speak French. I mean, he's bilingual, but they're both very bilingual. But the distinction to be made is that Jean Charest is a person who was in the Conservative federal government of Brian Mulroney, then was the premier of Quebec for three terms for the Liberal Party. But in Quebec, the Liberal Party is a coalition of Liberals and Conservatives, but it's a different focus. And he would qualify as a centrist who tends to move within reasonable parameters, move with public opinion more than lead public opinion. And in constitutional matters, as they're described in this country, he has been more of an appeaser of the Quebec nationalists, though he is himself unambiguously a federalist. In the case of Poilievre, he spent his whole time as a federal member of parliament, and he is an authentic conservative. So you would have, he would be, in American terms, a Reaganite, where Charest would be more sort of in the Bush McCain camp of moving it around a bit. And in constitutional terms, Poilievre is a more unambiguous federalist, less inclined to make concessions to the nationalists of Quebec. So you've got a choice in those areas, but it's a reasonably subtle choice, not a stark Manichaean division, but a legitimate policy choice in the two most important areas in this country, the economy and the relationship of the whole country with Quebec as an 80% French province.
Many issues come to mind for Canada, but you've just mentioned the two that will be most determinative over these next years. Energy is the story of your wealth of resources in Canada. It is the beginning of the story. We concentrate on that because the Trudeau government has committed itself to COP26, to the net zero that has dominated the conversation, except until now. We see in London, for example, the new government of Liz Truss is reversing course and going for fracking and expanding the extraction from the North Sea and talking about nuclear energy. The Trudeau government has not said as much yet. However, the commitment to the Green New Deal in America is matched by similar rhetoric in Canada. Do you expect the Conservative Party to challenge this? Do you expect there to be changes even before the Conservatives are in power, given the need of the world for energy?
I'll take the second point first. There has been no sign of that. The German Chancellor Scholz was here in Toronto a couple of weeks ago meeting with Justin Trudeau, and they didn't make much progress on a long-term plan for sending Canadian natural gas, which we have a huge surplus of, to Germany. So I think as of now, Justin Trudeau is very reluctant to change course very much. But in point of fact, I think since, as you know, I think the whole excessively and militantly green policy is insane, and said that repeatedly at intervals for 50 years. I believe those of us who've held that view, not climate deniers, but climate researchers, we want to know more before we shut down huge industries like this. I think our hour is finally coming. And you mentioned the new prime minister in Great Britain, but Germany itself, which under Merkel, a long-serving chancellor, 15 years, I believe, you know, they shut down the nuclear program. They rolled back domestic natural gas. They committed to all sorts of extravagant objectives in terms of reducing fossil fuel emissions. They find the automobile industry the greatest industry in Germany, and all of that is going out the window now. Even though we now have in Germany a government in which the second part of the three-party coalition are the Greens, and the Greens are sensible Greens, and the Greens in Germany 30 years ago were the most militant Greens of all of the major democracies. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a trend. And then, you know, I agree the Biden administration appears to be trying to cling to the militant Green policy, but it's not going to work. And electoral realities are going to be undeniable and overwhelming in all of these countries. I mean, in the end, in all of our Western democracies, the people decide, and they're not going to put up with the price increases they're going to get if we keep clinging to so-called renewable energy, which doesn't work, as you know, as we're seeing in California right now. I mean, you can't store the energy of windmills and solar panels, and you know, if the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't out, you're back to what we've had before.
And the Conservatives will challenge the status quo ante. But about Quebec, and it's a complicated story over many, many decades, I understand. But the Conservative leaders, are they ready to accommodate Quebec or challenge Quebec, especially this separatist trend you identify?
It is, as you say, complicated because Quebec, in order for the French to maintain their share of the Canadian population, approximately 25%, they were a little higher, and they're actually slightly below that. But in order to stay in that bracket, they had to encourage a great deal of immigration from other French-speaking places, particularly Morocco, Algeria, Haiti, and Lebanon. And those people are not interested in Quebec nationalism. You know, they're coming from countries with, in, for the most part, somewhat confused political histories. And they haven't come here to a continent that they all know is 95% English-speaking north of the Rio Grande River. And they haven't come here in order to join a French nationalist movement in a part of Canada. So what the government of Quebec is doing now is not inching overtly towards separatism, but it is, and it must be said, they have been economically very well managing Quebec, and its economic status is improving, which everyone can applaud. And they are squeezing the English language in a culturally oppressive way, a way that does, in fact, infringe on reasonable standards of freedom of expression. And these new Quebecers don't mind that particularly. And they didn't come from great democratic countries anyway. But we're not at this point facing a separatist issue. We're facing a cultural rights issue. And I think in that area, the Poilievre side is apt to be more difficult for Quebec to deal with than Jean Charest would be if he were the Prime Minister of Canada.
Conrad, we just have a couple of minutes, and I wanted to pay tribute to the only Queen Elizabeth I've ever known. However, you, it turns out, went to the inauguration of Queen Elizabeth. What is your memory of that? We just have about a minute or so.
Yeah, well, my parents took, it was just my brother and me and our family, and they very generously took us, and I was only 8 years old, my brother was 4 years older, took us to the coronation. Now, we weren't in Westminster Abbey for the crowning, but we had a seat at the parade, to and from, and everything was put up on screens and so forth. There was a tremendous atmosphere in London, huge crowds watching this very festive atmosphere. And of course, all the ceremony that the British crown can lay on, which is quite something. And I remember the day King George VI died. He was a beloved monarch. And all through these years, Queen Elizabeth II has not been flamboyant, but she has been absolutely dutiful and has never embarrassed anybody. And the goodness knows, in 70 years, there have been a tremendous number of political controversies, not only in Britain, but in the other countries where she's accredited, including Canada. And she has performed with a standard of duty that gets a near perfect score. I think the respect and admiration for her that will be expressed will be extremely high and entirely deserved.
Conrad Black, distinguished biographer, writing for the National Post on the choices ahead for Canada and in tribute to Queen Elizabeth II. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.